ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Text 21, Chapter 21, Texts 4 through 9, 4 through 11. It's a highly technical chapter, the movements of the sun. I'll just read the translations for all the verses except for the one which we have a purport. When the sun passes through Mesha, that is Aries, and Tula, Libra, the durations of day and night are equal. When it passes through the five signs headed by Vrishabha or Taurus, the duration of the days increases until Cancer. Cancer is an astronomical sign. And then it gradually decreases by half an hour each until day and night again become equal in Libra. When the sun passes through the five signs beginning with Vrishchika, Scorpio, the duration of the day decreases until Capricorn, and then gradually it increases month after month until day and night become equal in Aries. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, as stated before, the learned say that the sun travels over all sides of Manasattara mountain in a circle whose length is 95.1 million yojanas or 760.8 million miles. On a Manasuttara mountain, due east of Mount Sumeru, is a place known as Devadhani, possessed by King Indra. Similarly, in the south is a place known as Samyamani, possessed by Yamaraj. In the west is a place known as Nimlochani, possessed by Varuna. And in the north is a place named Vibhavari, possessed by the moon god. Sunrise, midday, sunset and midnight occur in all those places according to specific times, thus engaging all living entities in their various occupational duties and also making them cease such duties. The living entities residing on Sumeru mountain are always very warm as at midday, because for them the sun is always overhead. Although the sun moves counterclockwise, facing the constellations, with Sumeru mountain on its left, it also moves clockwise and appears to have the mountain on its right, because it is influenced by Dakshinavarta wind. People living in countries at points diametrically opposite to where the sun is first seen rising will see the sun setting. And if a straight line were drawn from point where the sun is at midday, the people in countries at the opposite end of the line would be experiencing midnight. Similarly, if people residing where the sun is setting were to go to countries diametrically opposite, they would not see the sun in the same condition. Text 10. When the sun travels from Devadhani, the residence of Indra, to Samyamani, the residence of Yamaraj, it travels 23.7 million yojanas or 190.2 million miles in 15 ghatikas or 6 hours. Purport by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The distance indicated in the word sadhikani is pancha vinshati sahasradhikani or 25,000 yojanas. That plus 2.5 crores and 12.5 lakhs of yojanas is the distance the sun travels between each two cities. This comes to 23.775 million yojanas or 190.2 million miles. The total orbit of the sun is 4 times that distance, or 95.5 million yojanas, or 760.8 million miles. Vandeham. So we are reading from Canto 5, chapter 21. And this is the technical part of Srimad Bhagavatam, which deals with very, very exacting scientific information. Of course, the word scientific has to be measured properly in today's terms. Many or most of these things may clash directly with what authorities or so-called eminent personalities who call themselves physicists or astronomers, scientists. And there's a very good reason for that. Srimad Bhagavatam represents that particular process of getting knowledge, which itself is diametrically opposite to what goes on in today's times as the process of gathering knowledge. The very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the source of not only this world but all worlds as Abhigya. Abhi and Gnya. Of course, this word Gnya, from which Jnana or Jnana Gamya, Jnaya, all these words come, Gnya means knowledge, to know. This root also corroborates with the English word, where we have words like gnosis, a person who doesn't, who is skeptical about the existence of God is called a gnostic. So that same root is there. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture says, mostly people in today's age, they wonder who this God is, God with a capital G. And people with little Vedanta knowledge, but more creative inclination, they say that God is, G means the generator, O means the organizer, and D means the destroyer. So it's very colorful, it's very poetic, but then you still don't know who this generator, organizer and destroyer is. So Puranas, Itihasas, they give so many hints, but in the words of Srila Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam pinpoints exactly, it points a finger. This personality is the source of everything. For example, if somebody wants to know where this particular person's house is, and if the only thing you have is it's in the east. Now in the east, there could be houses, rivers and forests and so many things. But when you know, 7 KM Munshi Marg, there is no mistake. You have to find out where KM Munshi Marg is in Bombay, and you have to find the 7th house on this road, and that is the temple. So it's not like Radha Gopinath is somewhere in Bombay. It's correct. It's not wrong. But many devotees have come from other places. What if you come to Bombay with just one piece of information? 7K Munshi Marg. Of course, the Lord is in your heart. Perhaps He may guide you. But notwithstanding that thing, so that's the difference. We have to understand very clearly. All other texts, they give hints, they give general description, but Bhagavatam gives an exact description. So, Jnya means knowledge, and Abhi means specific or supreme. This knowledge is not just haphazard or taken in an experimental way. What is technically called the Avaroha Pantha or the Aroha Pantha. Aroha is to go from one level of understanding to another. Arohan, to go from one stage higher. Surprisingly, it looks like this higher, going higher is a good process, but it is not. Almost all laboratories, all technical institutions, all the places in the world, they feel that the more they gather their data, their knowledge is increasing. Isn't it a fact? That's what you and me were taught in school. Especially statistical, anybody studying statistics here, the whole thing is based on the sample study. What's your sample? What's the population? What's the sample? Population doesn't mean the number of people living. Population means what kind of data you are organizing or accumulating, and what's the sample from that. So, for example, there is this joke about a statistician, an astronomer, and a logician going in a train, and they see a sheep grazing in the fields. And the astronomer says, "Wow, this place has black sheep everywhere." That's their understanding. They see something, they must be feeling it must be everywhere. So he says, "Hey, this area is swarming with black sheep, because I saw one." The statistician says, "Well, you can say that in this part of the country, while going from this particular point to that particular point, if you look in the northern direction, there is a good chance that you can find one sheep which is black." And the logician says, "To put it more accurately, the side of the sheep which we saw while going from this side to that side was certainly black. I don't know much about the other side. Perhaps it could be of another color." So that's how, this is what is mundane wrangling, what Prabhupada calls word jugglery. So the more you gather data, the more is supposed to be the development of knowledge. In fact, take the annual report of any pharmaceutical industry, and you'll find that last year we discovered 27 new medicines. Now, isn't that an advancement? Sure it is. But Prabhupada says that means 27 new diseases have come. How does that figure out in our general sense of being happy? It should be that diseases should decrease. Lokanath Maharaj once wrote an article that in 1957 or 1960s, when he just took birth, in the entire district of about 125 villages, there was only one primary health care center. And in 30 years, when he went again to his village, they inaugurated a big hospital. So that was given the, an impression was given that this is progress, that we didn't have any hospital, and therefore now we are making one. But he was thinking that previously people used to die, still people are dying, and at that time there was no need for so much of medical care in that sense. Of course, we are not against taking care of the human body. But just this, adhering to this one statement that just because we are having newer and newer discoveries in the field of science, that means knowledge is increasing. Of course, in one IIT program, Dayamrita Swami was giving this, making this statement, and most of the students, those who were newcomers, they were like nodding their heads in this opposite way. They said, "No, we can't agree to this. Such is the way in which we have been impelled to think that the more information you have, that much your knowledge has increased about something." There are so many conversations where devotees taking the sides of scientists would argue with Prabhupada. But at least the scientists are knowing something. At least their research is increasing. The Prabhupada says that means they are not having real knowledge now. If you say that I am closer to the truth, that means you are never at truth. You may say you are closer, who knows whether you are closer or not. But we here, Prabhupada saying, we means those who represent the followers of Vyasadeva, as he is the main person who gave us all these Vedic literatures. Prabhupada gives one example. Jalaja Navalakshani. There are 9 lakh species of living entities who live in water. Prabhupada says, no, 2 or 3 more or 2 or 3 less. 9 lakhs means 9 lakhs, that's all. So that is the exacting nature of Vedic knowledge. So abhigya means one who knows all these things exactly as they are. He doesn't need to be informed by someone. And Lord Brahma is the creator of this universe. He takes knowledge from this abhigya. So some Puranic information says that Lord Brahma is supreme because he has created this. But the Vedic literature doesn't give much importance to somebody who is creating. He could be the secondary creator. And that's what we, in our daily life, we can see. Somebody creates, there are carpenters working for our temple. They are making cupboards. Just because they made it, doesn't mean they can carry that home tomorrow. Oh, we made it. You made it, but we supplied the ingredients. So we are the owners. Similarly, Krishna supplies the ingredients. And Brahma is just a person who compiles them. In fact, Brahma's life is described. When he was created, he didn't know who he was. What his job is. What he's supposed to do. And he had to perform tapasya. He just heard two syllables. Tapa. Tapa. This is okay. Somebody is saying, I should do tapasya. And since there is nobody here, it should only... There's only one scenario. Me and my creator. And he wants me to do tapasya. After tapasya, he was qualified. He became a brahmana by hearing the Gayatri, which was a vibration of Krishna's flute. So, dvija, the word in the Vedic Shastra, dvi is two or twice, and ja means to get birth. So, one birth is the birth of the material body. That's good enough for material knowledge. But you need a higher birth for higher knowledge. And that is the awakening of the spiritual knowledge. So simple thing, the sun rises, the moon rises, fruits, flowers come in various seasons. Ordinarily speaking, that should be good evidence for someone to understand that God exists. And we should try to find him out. But Kali Yuga, the age which we are living in, is so fallen that we don't think this is as miraculous. If I say, from tomorrow, you all can see the sun will rise in the east. They say, we also can make that prediction. What's so wonderful about it? But actually the sun rising every day, if anybody has actual experience of going to a place before sunrise and seeing how in a matter of a minute, you can actually feel the modes change. It's like dark, tamogunas, last remnants are there. And as soon as the first rays of the sun touch you, you feel different. You feel the new sort of experience. So Krishna is making this new experience happen every day. And still we don't feel, oh, what's so great about it? Because it's an everyday miracle. We look upon a miracle as something which happens only once in a while. For example, some years ago, suddenly somebody discovered that his deity of some demigod actually drank some milk. You might have remembered. And someone came here and asked Radhanath Maharaj that that particular demigod temple, people are flocking with 100 ml or 200 ml of milk. And they actually see the deity drinking it. Prabhupada says, Radha Gopinath eats every day. Radhanath Maharaj says, Radha Gopinath eats every day. No, but we don't see him. That's the point. How long can we insist that I should see something happening, only then I will believe it? So this is the mental image or a paradigm in which we are so mired in, we cannot get out of it. I remember in our school days, there was this Marathi poem, Nemechi Yeto Pavasala, He Srishtiche Kautuk Jana Bala. Every season or every year, rainy season comes. And my dear child, you should understand this to be such a nice miracle of nature. So this author begins his essay with this couplet. And he says, every year rainy season comes, what's so big deal about it? If it doesn't come, it's miraculous. Suppose it doesn't rain at all in June, July. It's very cold in Bombay, bitter cold in June, July, August, September. And from March onwards, it rains. March, April, May, profuse rain. And everybody would be like, oh, it's a miracle, or some freak of nature. So our brains have been dulled. That's the only way to see it. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture says that the qualifications for understanding this knowledge is to control the senses, to control the mind, to be tolerant, titikshavam, damam, shamam. But Prabhupada says today we are trained to become electrician, technician. So he says, no, that's not the qualification to understand this knowledge. Just because you are a technologist, that doesn't mean you can manipulate this knowledge, technology also. There is a different process by which you can do that. The Vishnu Purana explains, how can one person sitting in one place know everything? How can one person know? A chief executive or a head officer, he has to have people working under him and they give him information. Similarly, ek desha sthitasya agneer jyotsna vistarini yatha. Vishnu is situated in one place, but jyotsna, heat and light, is spread around a certain area. In this way, Krishna is cognizant about everything which is happening. He has multifarious energies. Unless we have a God who has energies, there is no meaning to the word God. Like unless we have a king who has a kingdom, he has a family, queen, he has armies, he has treasury, there is no meaning to the word king. Otherwise it would be like what happened after independence, India's landlords. The land went away, just the lords remain. No, that's not the meaning of... God doesn't get depleted. He's not sorry that his stock of reserves or his resources have been finished due to the passage of time. The Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami's classic work, describes that to understand Krishna, all these movements of the sun and everything, they all depend on one person. Brahma Samhita describes the sun as Yasyagnaya Brahmati Sambhrita Kala Chakro. The sun is an order carrier of Krishna and he specifically stays on that course. If you see a train moving on rails at high speed, stopping and again going at high speed, obviously it means somebody is in charge. It can't happen by chance. Similarly, the sun, such a massive, vast, almost non-depletable source of energy, and it is remaining on its fixed course. Scientists can now make that claim that if the sun was 1 degree closer, there would be so much heat that there would be no life here. If the moon was 1 degree closer, there would be high tides, such high that the whole world would be inundated 12 hours in a day. 12 hours water everywhere, 12 hours no water. So obviously, there is some control. But this Krishna, it's not easy to understand, or it's not easy to get his audience. Once Brahma and Indra went to Dwarka, and they were offering prayers, maybe in a loud voice. So Krishna's security guard came and said, please be a bit silent. Now just imagine, his security guard has so much power. Just like in our Mayapur Gada ashram, there is this signboard in Bengali, Daya karo aste katha bolun. Please talk softly. So, here Krishna is so powerful. Forget how powerful Krishna is. Krishna's orderly, his security guard can come and talk to the Brahma and Indra of that particular universe that, shh, silence. And they have to obey him. Obviously, if you obey somebody's servant, obviously you have to obey that person. So it's not easy. Brahma himself says, Vedeshu Durlabham. If you say that the Vedas is the only way, I'll go through the Vedas, I'll master it completely, then I'll understand who he is. No. Vedeshu Durlabham. A Durlabham, but there's a way out. Atma Bhakto. Those who are his devotees, for them, it's very easy. In fact, when Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, the very same person, we are seeing the glories of his energies. But when the same person comes in this material world to perform his leelas, Lord Chaitanya's devotees have detected that he is no ordinary person. So many times we find devotees telling him, Tumi Swatantra Ishwar, you are the supreme controller. What can we tell you? But since Krishna Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of a devotee, he says, no, you tell me what I should do. I was just reading this from the chapter which describes Lord Chaitanya's desire to go to Vrindavan. In fact, the day he took inspiration from Ishwarpuri, he was mad. And he was trying to find Vrindavan. But then this unmanifested voice of the demigods, they said, my lord, now is not the proper time. Of course, we are your servants. But please, the proper time will come later. Immediately after taking sannyas, he tried to find out where is Vrindavan. And it was Nityanand Prabhu who tricked him. He told some cowherd boys that if a Gosai comes this way and asks, what is the way to the Yamuna, tell him to point out the way to the Ganga. So seeing this holy river, Lord Chaitanya took a dip, was swimming, and suddenly he finds Advaita Acharya. He says, what are you doing here in Vrindavan? He says, Vrindavan? This is Shantipur. This is no Vrindavan here. This is my village. He says, but I thought I'm trying to find Vrindavan. He says, forget it anyway. Now that you're here, why not give me the opportunity to serve you a little bit? Now that you're wet, you will need some fresh cloth. And little bit, some few grains, few morsels I have cooked. Just accept that. So saying, it became a 3-day festival of chanting and dancing. And Advaita Acharya making a massive celebration. So, after that, they brought Sachi Mata, and this is the first time she's taking darshan of her son, and she says, please don't go anywhere. And Lord Chaitanya saying to her that I made a mistake by taking sannyas, I'm so sorry, maybe I should stay with you. And she said, no, don't do that. If you stay, what do people say? There is a sannyasi staying in his own house, surrounded by comforts. No. I won't want that people should defame you. So Lord Chaitanya says, my head is at your feet. You tell me what I should do. Stay in Jagannath Puri. It's like 2 rooms of the same house. I can see you. I'll be getting news about you. And you also will fulfill your sannyas vows. So he says, fine. Later, much later, when Lord Chaitanya comes to Ramakeli, to deliver specifically the 2 brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, again the desire comes, I want to see Vrindavan. And then Sanatan Goswami tells him, it's not exactly proper to go to Vrindavan with this big crowd following you. So Lord Chaitanya, although he's a supreme lord, there is a specific word which is given in the Shastras, Bhakta Vatsala is how you love your devotees, and Bhakta Vashyata, how you are controlled by the love and affection of your devotees. So Sanatana Goswami is telling him, this is not the way to go to Vrindavan. with a big following. So Lord Chaitanya himself says later, I almost felt as if I was some kind of magician coming into a town and showing his show. This was the cultural scene at that time. It may happen sometimes today also. There is a circus coming to town and they make a big sound and advertisement. So Lord Chaitanya felt someone like that. That I don't need to go. You don't need to broadcast your presence in Vrindavan. There's already someone doing that. So he said, when Sanatan told me this, I didn't take it seriously. But in the evening later, I was thinking that yes, what he said is correct. One or two people, that's all is needed. So then when he comes to Puri, all the devotees, then he on the way to Puri, he meets the devotees in Bengal. And he tells them that since I have come here, you don't come to Puri this year for Rath Yatra. You stay in Bengal. He comes to Puri, the devotees of staying in Puri, Haridas Thakur, Gadadhar Pandit, Kashishwar, they all meet him. And then Lord Chaitanya says, I have to tell you something in my heart. For a long time I desired to visit Vrindavan. Now please, all of you, give me your permission. Give me your blessings. It's very strange. Somebody who, by whose will, the Bhagavatam explains about Lord Kapila, Mad bhayat vati vatoyam, suryas tapati mad bhayat. Vahati Indra Dahati Agnir Mrityush Charati Madhayat. By fear of me, the wind flows. By fear of me, Indra sends forth rain. By fear of me, Mrityush Charati, Yamaraj kills everybody, because if he doesn't do it, it's an order. And the same person, he comes and asks his devotees to give him permission. So Gadadhar Pandit tells him, of course he's very much attached to Lord Chaitanya staying in Puri. He says, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. Whatever you see, that is Yamuna, that is Govardhan. So what is the need to go there physically? In fact, Lord Chaitanya himself said that, Mora man Vrindavan, my mind is Vrindavan. And Prabhupada gives a hint that Vrindavan is technically not a physical place. Of course, there is a village, Vrindavan. After getting down at Mathura, you take a taxi or a rickshaw and go there. But that's not exactly Vrindavan, because it's a conscious place. In order to go there, you have to take permission from your spiritual master, from all the authorities, predecessor acharyas. Only if they give permission, we can actually enter into Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is no mood to listen to what Gadadhar Pandit is saying. He says, very soon I am leaving. Give me one assistant. But if I choose someone amongst you, if I choose one, others will feel sad. So give me some new person. And that new person should be composed, peaceful in nature, and good in his duties. Of course, this was because in South India, Mahaprabhu's servant ran into some difficulties. So Mahaprabhu requested that somebody who should calm and composed, you should give me that person. The devotee said, okay, we'll give you one. Balabhadra Bhattacharya is a new person, but also he's very much in love with you, Vidwan, he's very knowledgeable. And he will give one more as a cook. Balabhadra would cook, but he would be his assistant. So actually three people, Lord Chaitanya and his two assistants. One night, immediately after midnight, Lord Chaitanya gets up, starts on his way to Vrindavan. The day after, devotees wake up and find there is no presence of the Lord anywhere, and they are deeply in sorrow. But of course, Lord Chaitanya is described as someone who is soft as a rose or hard as a thunderbolt. His presence was soft. His separation from him was harder than a thunderbolt. He did not purposefully take the road which was the main road to go to Vrindavan. He chose a bypass road going through the forest of Jharkhand. That place is still there today. And Because he is the supreme controller, amazing things happen on the way. The small forest path, it's not even single dirt road, just forest paths. And on the forest path, there is a tiger lying straight. And seeing Lord Chaitanya, he just gets up and gives way. And they go straight. At one place, Lord Chaitanya finds the deer coming in a single file for meeting him. As soon as Lord Chaitanya sees them and he touches them, they all start dancing in joy. Once he entered a lake to take his bath, at the same time a herd of wild elephants, they entered to take their bath. And playfully Lord Chaitanya took some water and splashed on them and said, "Hari Bol, Hari Bol, chant Hari Krishna." Suddenly the elephants started trumpeting wildly. We have never heard animals chanting Hare Krishna. But that was the miracle which Lord Chaitanya, he enacted there. Seeing the elephants, the tigers came. And the tigers also seeing the whole thing, they also started dancing. The deer came and the tiger started kissing the deers. This is too much. We've never seen or experienced or heard anything like this before. So there are the trees. Trees can't speak or move, but they are just shivering. Of course, they were the echo given by the non-moving living entities. And the whole atmosphere was permeated with the loud chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare! Hare Ram! Hare Ram! Ram Ram! Hare Hare! In fact, even Balabhadra Bhattacharya, who was knowing Lord Chaitanya is non-different than Krishna, seeing the first stages of this performance, he hid himself behind a tree. Very afraid to see that, you know, wild animals coming to them, what's going to happen? And as no sooner than this thing started, Lord Chaitanya started walking further. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada says that trying to understand this world by understanding nature's laws is a very roundabout, risky, and a difficult process. For example, we credit Isaac Newton with the discovery of the law of gravity. By the way, he didn't invent it, he discovered it. Apples were falling long ago. Apples have fallen on the heads of so many people long ago, they must have just eaten it. But this one person, while eating it, was just pondering why it came down. And we were saying, obviously, it has to come down. What goes up must come down. But he said, why didn't it go up? Maybe there is something pulling it. Fine. For just this one simple piece of discovery, he's glorified as the father of modern physics. Of course, these fathers and mothers of modern science, they have a very quick divorce. Their family life doesn't last long. After some time, there is someone, a paramour like Albert Einstein, forgive me for using a modern metaphor, but Albert Einstein completely overruling Newtonian physics, saying that no, it's not true. Believe me, today there's a good number of scientists who say that not everything can be explained by Newtonian physics, because life doesn't follow that pattern all the time. So our endeavor to worship anyone else than Krishna is like having a garland which resembles our life, our aspirations, our energy. And we try to garland the deity of some mundane scientist only to find it crumbling down. And some new thing has come up. So we go there. Before we garland it, it has crumbled down. So how many times we have to do this process? Being frustrated all the time. Tomorrow somebody will certainly say that Einstein is correct on most counts except 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they may say, wow, here is a brain. He's a really knowledgeable person. So this will continue. And therefore they can't be trusted. But in the Ramayana, which is a very devotional text, doesn't claim to be, doesn't have the pride of being the only scientific text or whatever, but of course, it generally understood to be very scientific. Here we have Lord Ramchandra, the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, enacting another Leela. Also, this has a resemblance of being dependent on his devotees. And his devotees floating stones on water. And of course, the monkeys, there is no reference in the Ramayana that they drop something in the ocean and they say, okay, how long it stays? How does it go fast? What is the specific gravity? What is the speed at which it goes down? They didn't bother about these things. They said, if Lord Ramchandra wants, what cannot happen? If everything floats, in fact, it is said that Ram Naam is Tarak Naam. Tara is to deliver or to make it float. Tarna or Terna we call in Hindi. So they just wrote Ram on a big boulder and it floated. In fact, in some other text of the Lord Ram's story, Lord Ram himself showed this Leela of being surprised. So, at one point of time, when nobody was watching, he took a stone and released it. Plop! It went down. And he said, I hope nobody saw me. But Hanumanji was there and he was smiling. So he's saying, how is it that you all put boulders and mountain peaks and they all float? And if I just release one stone smaller than all of you have put together, but it went down. He said, my Lord, if anyone takes your name, if a stone has the word Ram written on it, similarly, if anyone's life has the word Ram written on it, why will it go down in this material ocean? It has to float. But if you give up someone, he's bound to go down. So, Srila Prabhupada says, here is the main crux of the issue. Who is more important? Or what is more important? The study of this law of gravity, that things released, there's a gravitational pull and they go down. Or the person is important by whose order or by whose grace, when he says the stone should not go down, they don't go down. Normally they should. Why? Not because there is some law. He orders it. Krishna's first expansion, Balaram, he is Anandadev and he is the gravitational, the personification of gravitational energy. In modern parlance, if there is a criminal case against someone and the government orders, your bank account is frozen. What does it mean? They put the bank in a refrigerator? No. They just don't allow him to open it, to withdraw cash. So, that power is there with proper authorities. That something can be frozen, something can be released. You and me can't do it. So therefore, Krishna can, has done and will be doing in the future things totally against the laws. Because the laws are not meant to govern how God should govern the universe. Laws are meant for us to understand. This is how we can understand how God sort of governs the whole cosmos. So, although these texts may sound very dry and giving technical information, they are a necessary part of Srimad Bhagavatam and they give necessary information as to, like in Ishopanishad it is said, Ishopanishad is part of Yajurveda and Isha means a controller. The word Isha means controller. How does Krishna control? And just like in a citizen, he may not become a loyal citizen unless he understands how the government controls. A patriot doesn't need to know that the government controls. He already is in love with his country. He can sacrifice his life. But being a patriot, the first step is to become a loyal citizen. Similarly, to become a pure devotee of Krishna, the first step is to understand what this world is, Who am I? What's my role? How am I a servant of Krishna? And therefore, these texts, they help us to go forward in that direction. So I will stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections? Yes, Puji. Rishabhanu Prabhu.
Thank you very much for a wonderful class, Prabhuji. Parikshit Maharaj accepts all this scientific data. He's on the verge of death. He's going to die in 7 days. But accepts all this information as Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's glory. But some of us who are very, very poor in spiritual progress, when we look at this data, we don't feel any inspiration whatsoever. Does that mean that we are lacking somewhere, or we have to develop a perspective which is different?
If I understand your question correctly, you're saying that how exactly will this technical information help us to understand Krishna's pastimes better, or to make us better devotees in that sense? So Rupa Goswami has given a very nice formula in his Nectar of Devotion. He calls some objects as Uddipana, or objects of Uddipan, which technically means it lights up. Deepa, it lights up. So that object is not actually Krishna. It may not be very, very intimately connected with Krishna. Many are, but some may not be also. But by seeing that, there is a remembrance. For example, we see in the life of was that Narahari Sarkar who saw the feather? Mukunda. He saw the Nawab, or the Muslim ruler, being fanned by a peacock fan. Now this is a mundane scene. We might see and we say, you know, what kind of fellow is this? Or we might get different Uddipans. But because he's a devotee, just seeing the peacock feather, he says, peacocks, feathers, Vrindavan, Krishna, and that's enough to make him swoon. He falls down from that pedestal. So, it is not true that at the time of death, we will be asked that, you know, what is the total orbit of the sun? That kind of question is surely not going to come in the question paper. Some may know, some of the devotees may actually be thrilled by this information that they know the whole thing by heart. And the rest of us, or absolute majority, of course, may feel, my God, I just skipped school for all this thing. And now after coming to Bhagavatam class, of all things I have to hear is all these millions of yojanas which nobody uses nowadays. What am I supposed to do with that? We can still use this device of Uddipan and relate it to how Krishna controls everything. If you like, you can go into the subject in very much detail, and that also will help you. If you don't feel that you are cut out for that, fine. But if we think that this is extraneous or this is not necessary, that's not true. And as you rightly pointed out, all this is given to someone who only has 7 days to live. There is nothing which is not deeply thought out by, first of all, Vyasdev, when he gave the Vedas. And this is the ripened fruit of the Vedas. So this information is not like, it was not given anywhere. What Srimad Bhagavatam has is something from all the Puranas, the very essence, and a very precise gloss which doesn't create any kind of doubt in your mind. For example, in some Puranas, a particular personality may be described as the Supreme Person, full stop. And we may say, well, if he's Supreme Person in this Puran, maybe that person is Supreme Person in that Puran. So do they conflict each other? No, there is no conflict. They talk of one single universe. Like when we say the big boss of corporation A, and there is a big boss of corporation B, they might be different. Isn't it? The head of the family. There are billion family heads. What about one person who is the supreme head for everyone? That's Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this information may actually come in the category of giving that rise, that small impetus for appreciating Krishna. Would anyone like to add this something? Yadubhar Prabhu? Gopinath Prabhu? I hope I have clarified something. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I know some astronomer. What they predict something that happens. Something about life, whatever they speaks, that happens. But they don't accept Krishna as God. They tell whatever knowledge they have, that is perfect. That's why people put faith on them than Krishna, whatever told by Prabhupada. My question is, why Lord Krishna gives them such intelligence? So that whatever they speak, that can happen.
If I understand your question, how come astrologers predict very accurately and still they don't believe in Krishna or they are atheists or whatever? So why Krishna gives them this knowledge? Is it true? Is this the question? First of all, astrology, as you and me know, who are non-specialists in this field, is not what actually astrology is. What astrology is sort of peddled in the market outside is more like, it will be very hot in the month of May. You don't need astrology for that. It may rain in June. You don't need astrology for that. It is based on a previous experience. So you may not have that previous experience. If somebody is born in the month of December, and suppose he could get that knowledge, he could imbibe it, and he also could understand and speak, and if that boy is told, or that girl is told that in June it will rain, and he finds it, really, this person is a greatly intelligent person. No, he just experienced, or he has some historical evidence. So, real astrology, where you can actually pinpoint accurate details in such a way that a person becomes a devotee of God, is the purpose behind this science. And just like in Kali Yuga with everything else, it is misused. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki.